Hello, you're listening to Niecy's HealthWise, and I'm Niecy Carbone. My guest today is Charles Benz. Charles Benz holds a PhD and is an internationally recognized author, speaker, and consultant who specializes in organizational improvement and workplace wellness. He has been recognized as the Man of the Year in both the U.S. and Canada. Charles has spoken at United Nations Habitat Conference and is one of the top-rated speakers for Vistage International, which is the largest CEO organization in the world. He's also received a commendation from the President of the United States. Charles has written 9 books and over 200 articles, as well as had 3 university courses written by him under his belt. He currently lectures at the Academy for Strategic Management at Florida International University. He is the CEO of Healthy at Work Incorporated, and Charles Benz's latest book is entitled Rebecca Sues Her Mother, and is the story of a 19-year-old college student who is diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and determines that her mother is partly to blame for having fed her a diabetes-contributing diet. Rebecca decides to sue her mother to send a message to other mothers about the responsibility in their children's diet and the potential consequences of disregarding a healthy diet for them. Welcome, Charles. I really like your book, and I found it chock full of helpful information about diet causes and effects, supplements, alternatives, etc. And let me tell my listeners that I highly recommend this book for anyone who eats.
Thank you, Niecy. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, Charles. Let's start off with what type 2 diabetes is and how it differs from type 1 diabetes.
Yes, of course. There's 3 types, actually. There's gestational, which is usually during pregnancy and then goes away afterwards.
Right.
There's the type 1, which is more based on genetics. Either the pancreas doesn't have enough beta cells, which make insulin, or the body starts to attack itself as an autoimmune disease and destroy those cells. That's about 5%, maybe 10% at max of the number of cases that are out there. 90% plus are type 2 diabetics. And they are usually type 2 diabetics because of lifestyle decisions. Usually diet and exercise are the big things. So we've probably got a situation where up to 90%, maybe even more, of type 2 diabetics could actually have been prevented. And in some cases, now we know we can reverse type 2 diabetes.
Okay, well, before we get into that, I'm not certain that a lot of people understand what insulin does in the body and how it works and why diabetes affects it. Could you explain that to us?
Sure. On every cell in the body, there are insulin receptors. And these insulin receptors are responsible for catching insulin and glucose when it comes to the cell to go in to be made into energy. So the pancreas's job is to actually make the equal amount of insulin to the glucose that you eat. So if you eat 100 milligrams of glucose, the pancreas has to make 100 milligrams of insulin because glucose is not allowed to be in the body by itself. So those two molecules then hook up, travel through the bloodstream, going throughout the body to the 50 trillion cells that we have, and then trying to get into the cell by being caught by these insulin receptors.
Mm-hmm.
So this is quite crucial. Without insulin, glucose can't get into the cell. It can't even be delivered.
And so if it doesn't get into the cells, then it's not converted to energy. So if it's traveling through the bloodstream and not being converted to energy, is that when it turns into diabetes?
That's when it turns into diabetes, when you've got a situation where the pancreas can't keep up with the production of insulin.
Uh-huh.
It's become exhausted, and you take the 100 milligrams of glucose in, but it can only make 50 milligrams of insulin.
Gotcha.
Now you've got circulating glucose in your bloodstream, and this glucose oxidizes, and that's what causes the damage to your cells and your nerves, which leads to amputations and blindness and heart attacks and all the rest of it.
Right. We all understand the oxidation effects in our body, oxidative stress, all those things that we're trying to do
right,
to reduce free radicals, which also cause oxidation. That was an excellent description, by the way. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, what are the symptoms of type 2 diabetes if I didn't know I had it and hadn't had a blood test?
Well, if you don't have a blood test and you're looking for the kinds of symptoms that typically show up, I think that frequent urination, Being thirsty all the time are things that are definite signs that you've probably got some concerns. Fatigue and just headaches, dizziness. One of the things that happens to Rebecca is that she faints at a party.
Ah, okay.
And so that's when her friends say, oh, by the way, you shouldn't be fainting at a party.
Yeah.
You maybe should go see your doctor. So.
And when you say frequent urination, would that be someone who's urinating once an hour or four times a day?
You know, it could be once an hour, once every half hour. I mean, getting up at night to have to urinate three, four, five, six times.
Wow.
This is the sign.
Okay. What are the statistics surrounding diabetes and how have they changed during the last decade or so?
Well, previous to, say, the year 2000, the typical percentage of people who were diagnosed with diabetes was somewhere between 7 and 8%. And we also know that there were probably 15 or 20% of the population that was pre-diabetic. The problem is that about 50% of those people didn't even know that they were either pre-diabetic or diabetic because they weren't going to get tests and they weren't paying attention to their symptoms. But since the year 2000, a recent study by the Centers for Disease Control estimates that children born after the year 2000, 38% of Caucasian children will be diabetic, 43% of African American children will be diabetic, and 49% of Hispanic children will be diabetic in our lifetime.
That's staggering.
That's over a almost a 600% increase in the incidence of diabetes. And the projection is that probably everybody in the country will be diabetic by the year 2060-65.
Or the majority of us. At least those of us who are eating healthily won't be. But
hopefully. But the percentage is when you look at the curve, if you look at the projections,
yes,
it's like a straight line projection.
Wow.
And so at some point, even us healthy people must give in somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When you eat out, you can't control the amount of sugar that is put in your food. And sugar is put in things that you wouldn't expect it in. It's put in sauces on the fish and chicken that you're eating. It's put into creamed things that you might order.
Sure.
So there's no way of telling. And of course, God forbid you order a dessert, which I'm very fond of doing. that's loaded down with sugar too. So that's
sure.
Part of it. And also, this is one of my pet peeves, labeling. People are buying products in the store that are prepackaged or pre-made, and they don't take a look at the label. They assume it's healthy.
Right.
And if they don't look at the label, there could be a ton of sugar.
Sure.
It's the same with salt and fat. So that's probably how we'd all reach that stage.
And high fructose corn syrup is being put into more and more products, and it's one of the most dangerous things for diabetics and for people trying to gain weight. So this is a real problem. This high fructose corn syrup is really dangerous.
And while we're on that subject, I'm also going to mention that there are other forms of sugar that you should look for on the labeling, which is sucrose and glucose.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are also frequently put in. Cane sugar is another one that you'll frequently find on labels for your packaging. So you've heard me rail about this before, listeners. Please check your labeling. So, Charles, this is an interesting subject. How did you first get interested in it?
Well, you know, Nisi, I think that the study from the Centers for Disease Control was a red flag for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly was for me, too. I was concerned about it before, but then that statistic sort of raised the level a little bit higher, a lot higher, actually. And there was also, almost at the same time, there was a study by the National Institute of Health. And they actually took a number of pre-diabetic people, I think it was 1,000. They put half of them on metformin, which is the classic drug for diabetics, to try to get them to, you know, control their symptoms and not advance to a more dangerous level. The other half, they put on a special diet with exercise. And after a year, they had to stop the study because 31% of the people on the metformin did not advance to diabetes.
Really?
59% of the people on the nutritional changes and exercise did not advance to diabetes.
So you're saying that the people who just controlled their diet and exercise had better outcomes than the people who were put on prescription drugs
almost
to control their
twice
diabetes. Wow.
Almost twice as good. So when you look
at startling.
When you look at the statistics between the two studies, again from the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health, you realize this is a preventable disease. And so it kind of got me going. And then, as you probably have done in the past, you go through the grocery store and you watch what mothers are putting in their cart. You go to the checkout and you go, my God, what are you doing? I almost felt sometimes like shaking them. So it was a combination of this personal experience of watching what mothers were buying and these clinical and scientific studies were coming in that put me into some kind of altered state because I just thought I have to do something about that.
Well, let's talk about what mothers are buying that put you into this kind of a furor to get the word out over type 2 diabetes. What role do the sugared and processed foods, et cetera, play in diabetes, in type 2 diabetes? And what are the sorts of products that moms are buying in the store that contribute?
Well, you can look at the processed flour products, from the breakfast cereal to the breads to the cakes and everything else that they're buying. That's one of the biggest things because processed flour is treated the same way as sugar is in the body. It burns within 15 minutes. So you add to that the soft drinks and all the other sugar-added products that they're buying.
And fruit juice and desserts and ice cream and puddings.
They have a basket full of sugar.
Yeah.
And so when the kids are eating this from morning till night, that means the pancreas has to continually make insulin to keep up with this inflow of sugar into the body.
Right.
And eventually, the pancreas gets exhausted, and it cannot keep up with the production of insulin. And so it just falls behind, and all those insulin receptors that are sitting in all the cells, they become exhausted because they can't keep up with the processing of the insulin sugar.
Sure, because they're working full-time, and they're not supposed to. They're designed to.
They're not designed to work full-time. They're designed to be at rest a lot of the time, and there's no rest for them. And so both the pancreas and the insulin receptors become exhausted, which means now the glucose can't get into the cell. It's circulating, and it's starting to cause the damage.
It's causing the oxidation we spoke about earlier, which is going to turn into diabetes.
Type 2 diabetes used to be called adult onset diabetes.
Oh, I remember that.
It didn't happen until you were over 40.
Right.
One third of diabetics are now teenagers.
Oh, my God.
One third of diabetics are now teenagers.
Well, that's a wake-up call.
That is also one of those wake-up calls. The red flag goes up and says, wait a minute. Kids are now becoming diabetic at 9, 10, 11 years old.
Good Lord.
This didn't happen 30 years ago.
That's awful. Well, what should people be eating then to avoid or reverse type 2 diabetes?
Well, you know, I tell people to cut out as much sugar as possible. I mean, we know that there's a thing called the glycemic index out there. Mm-hmm. And that's a good starting point because it tells you what the sugar content is in the food. But we don't usually go far enough to measure the actual glycemic load. And the glycemic load is measured by taking the glycemic index and taking that times the grams of the food you're actually eating,
right,
and you end up with a glycemic load. So if a food has a higher glycemic load than 5, say, that's probably as top as that you should get in terms of eating an individual food. And every mother should know how to do this. This is not complicated trigonometry.
So let's cover it again. We're going to take the amount of sugar. Let's say that there's 20 grams of sugar,
right,
which is not an uncommon number in products I find.
Right.
In fact, that's low in some cases.
Right, right.
We take that 20% sugar that's in the product, and what do we multiply it by?
Well, you don't take the grams of sugar. You look at that product and see where it is
on the glycemic index. Okay.
So then you get a number from the index.
Right.
You multiply that times the actual grams of the product you're eating.
Okay.
That gives you the glycemic load.
Okay. And the grams is clearly listed at the top when it says how much a serving size is.
Exactly.
So we're going to convert the sugar on the glycemic index chart to find out what the glycemic load is, and we're going to take that number, multiply it by the number at the top of the box that says what a serving size is, and
right,
then we'll know what the glycemic load is.
Exactly.
Okay, very good.
And 5 is the maximum for an individual serving of food. 40 is the ideal number for the day. You shouldn't go over a glycemic load of 40 for the day.
Okay.
So if mothers know this, then it's a little bit simpler, a little bit easier to calculate than just looking at the grams of sugar in a product, which doesn't really give you what you need to know. And so we really say to mothers, look, get rid of the sugary cereals. Buy a cereal like shredded wheat or oatmeal or something that doesn't have any sugar added, and preferably a whole grain
whole
cereal.
Whole grain is so important.
Yeah, not a processed
grain.
Let's
stop right here and just cover that for a second, because before you talked about processed flour,
mm-hmm.
I want to add that the other thing that turns into a high glucose level are any product that is white. So we're talking about white bread, we're talking about white rice, we're talking about flour, we're talking about cookies, we're talking about crackers,
mm-hmm.
anything that is white. And if it says enriched or processed as the first ingredient on the line, that is what Charles is referring to when he says processed flour, okay? If you eat whole grains, or if you eat spelt or something that has been cracked, that's a type of carbohydrate that will not turn into a high glycemic index product because it is metabolized by the body more slowly and thus gives the pancreas more time to produce insulin. Am I correct?
You are very good. You are very good. The difference is the shell. If you take away the shell of the grain, you've taken away the thing that slows the processing down. That's the fiber.
And that's what they process out.
That's what they process out. So there's two things that happen. They can either take the shell away completely. That's totally refined and processed.
Mm-hmm.
Or they crack the shell. They leave it in the product. So the shell is still there. The fiber is still there. But it burns more slowly than the one that's taken away. But the slowest burning is the shell that's still on the grain.
Right.
So you can buy whole grain rice, for instance.
Right. Or you can buy brown rice.
Well, brown whole grain rice,
yeah, exactly,
takes you 20, 25 minutes to cook, the same as cereal. But instant oatmeal, for instance, is not a whole grain. Instant oatmeal is flakes.
Right.
And while it's maybe better than eating a sugary cereal, it's not as good as eating the whole grain cereal. So it really, the refined products, flour products, burn in 15 minutes in the body. The others take an hour to hour and a half. And as you said, it gives the pancreas a time to keep up with the production of the insulin. So I tell them to cut out the sodas. I mean, don't even buy sodas.
Right.
If you're going to do fruit juices, do a half a glass or water it down a little bit. Because
or cut it with some club soda,
exactly,
or sparkling water, exactly, or something like that.
Exactly. And we tell all diabetics in our classes, look, if you're going to eat a piece of fruit, eat some nuts and seeds with it, because it's kind of like adding the fiber.
Excellent tip.
And so then you get this slowing down of this whole process, and that's why it's important to have some nuts and seeds with your fruit. If you're overweight, you're pre-diabetic, you're diabetic, we tell every one of them to do that.
Excellent tip. Thank you for that. So what about families with small budgets?
Mm-hmm.
I can just hear people out there saying, well, fine, if you have unlimited resources, you can eat this way. But I have a small budget and a large family. What am
right.
I going to do?
You know, we've run into that a lot. I've actually taken groups of mothers shopping and had them all write down how much they spent mm-hmm. the last couple of weeks. And I get them to see if they can buy the healthy foods for the same amount every time they can. They buy in bulk. You can buy things by the case in many stores and get a discount.
Wow.
You can buy frozen foods, organic vegetables and fruits, much less expensive than buying the fresh ones. And they have the retained nutritional value because those foods are usually frozen within 10 to 24 hours of being picked. Mothers don't know this. And so these are just some of the secrets that they need to understand in order to be able to buy things and be, and of course they look for sales and they use coupons.
Sure.
Usually the coupons are for the less nutritious foods, unfortunately, but we give them all the tricks and tell them the difference between the different foods so that they're buying the highest nutritional value at the lowest cost.
Okay, and before we get off this subject, how do we compare frozen foods to canned foods in terms of vegetables?
Well, there's really no comparison in terms of the value. Once you heat a food up, you've destroyed so much of the enzymes and so many of the nutrients, 50 to 80% in some cases, that there's no comparison. There's only two or three foods that are really okay to buy in a can, and that's beans and tomatoes, because in these products, the nutrients aren't destroyed. In some cases, in tomatoes, the nutrients are actually enhanced.
The lycopene.
Raises whenever you heat the food or stew the tomatoes. So stay away from canned foods, especially green beans and spinach and lima beans, stuff like that. Buy that stuff frozen. So I think that's the key. Try to stay away from canned foods as much as you can and go for the frozen because it's much healthier.
Okay, thank you. Now, if you tuned in recently, I'm interviewing Dr. Charles Benz on the subject of diabetes and the changing statistics, which are frightening, about the younger children who are getting type 2 diabetes when it used to be a disease for people over 35 or 40 years old. What about the average cost of treating type 2 diabetes versus treating a non-diabetic person? Can you give us some statistics or information about that?
The latest statistics show that the average person in a healthcare plan is, $2,000-$3,000, and a diabetes type 2 diabetic person is around $12,000. So
wow,
it's $9,000 or $10,000 more a year to have somebody with diabetes in your health plan. That translates into a cost nationally of about $200 billion.
$200 billion.
In about 20 years, that will be $1 trillion. And there are now projections that if we keep going at the rate we're going with these projections from the Centers for Disease Control,
if we don't reverse it,
we're going to be bankrupt by the year 2065. Every penny of the gross national product will be spent on diabetes by the year 2065.
That is horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. And you say that type 2 diabetes is reversible. Is that correct?
You know, this is the amazing thing. I am more shocked about this than I am anything else. I mean, I'm shocked about what the mothers are feeding their kids. But here's thousands and thousands of doctors in the country that don't know that you can actually reverse diabetes in as little as 3 days in some cases. You've had 5 or 6 books, excellent books, written on this topic. Dr. Julian Whitaker has been treating type 2 diabetics in his clinic in California for 30 years. He has reversed the diabetes of 20,000 people.
And he's been treating them with?
With nutrition, giving them the healthy grains, giving them vegetables, giving them lean meats like chicken and fish.
Supplements?
Nuts and
any
seeds.
Supplements?
The supplements they give them are consistent. Every doctor knows through 242 scientific studies that there are nutritional supplements that are amazing at helping to reverse this process. So you've got things like magnesium, very key because it's the mineral that helps the glucose and insulin actually get through the cell membrane and inside the cell where it can be used. So magnesium is crucial. That's why greens are so important.
Okay.
Lots of magnesium in greens.
Yeah, lots of magnesium.
So chromium, vanadium. There's an herb called Sylvester Janina.
Between the two of us, we'll get it.
We'll get it. And this herb, actually, with these other 4 or 5 that I mentioned, helps to balance the blood sugar, helps the sugar get into the cell. And so there's about 10 that we recommend in our book in the ideal diet. So
in Rebecca Sue's Your Mother.
Yes, we actually have a protocol in there. That's the amazing thing about the book. Half of it is the story of Rebecca suing her parents. The other half of the book is the protocol that we teach in our classes for preventing and reversing diabetes. So technically, half the book is fiction and half the book is nonfiction.
Okay, why is this book so controversial? You know, the title, Rebecca Sues Her Mother, why is it so controversial?
Well, you know, I think, look at all the ballplayers on television. The first chance they get to say hi to somebody, they go, hi, Mom. So mothers are sacrosanct.
True.
And I don't think anybody in the media wants to take them on because mothers are the ones that buy things. Mothers are the ones, I mean, everybody
they
has a
the
mother.
Food,
they buy the food.
They prepare it and cook it.
They
drive through and buy it.
What media wants to offend one of their major advertisers or several of their major advertisers at one time. So you've got a media that is scared. You've got individual reporters that are scared. You're not. You're willing to step up and do this and say the right thing and do the right thing. But
well, 90%
of the media shies away from it because the title is terrifying
to them. Why did you choose that title, Charles?
For that very reason. I wanted to shock value because the whole program of trying to prevent reverse diabetes that's been underway for 30 or 40 years now has failed and failed miserably. So I thought to myself, if we don't do something to raise the attention level to this, we're never going to get this problem solved.
Sure.
So, you know, I think eventually the media is going to have to cover it, and I think that the title is going to be out there. Every mother who has read this book loves this book. And what they say when they write back to me, I wish I would have had this book 20 or 30 years ago when I was raising my children. I want to make sure my grandchildren aren't subjected to the same thing I subjected my kids to. Mothers have to be honest with themselves. Every mother who's read this book loves this book.
Just tell me, for the proactive people, what tests would you recommend that they get? Let's say maybe I'm experiencing some of this stuff, or maybe I'm experiencing none of it yet, but want to make sure I don't. Mostly we get a fasting glucose tolerance test. That's what all the doctors seem to be ordering. How effective is that, and is there something else that we could use?
Wow, what a great question. The A1C test is the gold standard in the medical community.
And that is
the fasting glucose test.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this test only detects prediabetes or diabetes after so many cells have become dysfunctional in the pancreas and throughout the body that you've got a 5 to 7 year advanced state of diabetes or prediabetes.
Mm. So you've already had diabetes and you don't know it by the time you get the test.
Exactly.
Okay.
The better test is the glucose challenge test.
All right.
The glucose
challenge
test is either after a meal, they test you 3 or 4 times over a 2-hour period, and the speed at which your body returns glucose levels to normalized levels within that 2 hours tells the doctor whether you are at risk or not. Because within 2 hours, you should have your levels back to normal levels. So if after 2 hours, you're still elevated by 20, 30, 40%, they know that your pancreas is not producing the way that it should.
So it's overloaded.
It's overloaded, and your insulin receptors are not taking the glucose in. And this happens sometimes 5 to 7 years before it shows up as an A1C test.
Wow.
This is crucial.
Now, can anyone go to their doctor and request a glucose challenge test?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It costs more. And this is where the insurance companies come in, because they will readily pay for the more simple, less expensive A1C test. They will not pay out of their existing premiums for the glucose challenge, so usually people have to pay extra.
Or the difference.
The difference.
Yeah, but the difference is well worth it if you don't want to come down with type 2 diabetes.
I do a lot of work with employers, and so I say to them, pay for this test.
Right.
Because this is going to save you hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars down the road, depending on how big the employer is. And every one of them that I tell them to get this test for their employees, they do it.
Okay, and they probably are grateful that they have, because then people have an opportunity to reverse or stop getting type 2 diabetes, and the costs go down for everyone.
The earlier you find it.
You've got a healthier workforce.
The earlier you find it, the sooner you can get it reversed, and the higher the percentage is that you're going to be successful in reversing it. Absolutely.
Well, I think this is amazing information. And the last question I'd like to ask you before we run out of time is how this book is different from other books on diabetes, because there's a lot of them out there.
You know, another thing that the mothers write back to me was that they said they'd read things before on diabetes, but by putting it in a story, it made it real. Because this mother and this daughter go through all the experiences that any normal family would.
Sure.
And when it happens, the blame that they try to put on somebody else to do this, the mother is deflecting everything and denying everything and blaming it on doctors and the food industry and her daughter herself. And when you look at this in total, in the end, the mothers are the ones that buy the food.
Right, right. There's no 8-year-old that I knew out there buying food unless they're grabbing it from the candy counter at the checkout line.
There's no way to avoid this. And the other thing that people say is unique about it, and this is why I got this great endorsement from Dr. Julia Whitaker, he said, this book is so filled with practical, scientific-based evidence. And see, the book is half fiction, the story,
right,
and half nonfiction.
And half fact.
Yeah, exactly. So it's this protocol at the end of the book that explains everything, how the disease happens and how to reverse it and what foods to eat and what supplements to take. I think that's what separates this book from others, is it combines the fiction and the nonfiction parts together. And even in the nonfiction parts, where other doctors just say what to do, I say why and explain exactly how the body works and how this reversal happens.
Right. And having read the book, I'd have to say that that is the case. And also, it's a very easy book to get through. It's not a difficult read for those of you who are thinking that you're going to be looking at a textbook. That's not the case at all. Well, unfortunately, though, we could go on forever. That's all we have time for today. Charles, I'd like to thank you very much for being my guest.
Thank you.
And I'd like to tell people, if you'd like more information about type 2 diabetes and how to buy this book, RebeccaSuesHerMother.com is the website. Once again, RebeccaSuesHerMother.com is where you can find more information and purchase this book. I'm Niecy Carbone, encouraging you to tell your friends about Niecy's HealthWise. If you missed any portion of today's show or would like to hear archived episodes, you can find them on niecyshealthwise.com. That's niecyshealthwise.com. In the meantime, here's to your health.